Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
A science story, huh?
Is NYU scientist the...
I felt it.
I was so
and I just thought, well...
I had figured it out.
It was that golden moment.
Because science was on my side.
Hi, guys. Welcome to the Story Collider, where we bring you true personal stories about science. I'm Erin Barker, Artistic Director of the Story Collider, filling in for Ben Lilly this week. So this week we're bringing you two stories about scientists exploring new challenges, from managing unruly chimpanzees to swimming in the open water. Our first story this week is from Jeff Braden. It was recorded in April 2017 at the Red Room in Kinston, North Carolina. This show was produced in partnership with the NC State Leadership in Public Science Cluster, with support from the Burroughs Welcome Fund, the NC Science Festival, the NC State College of Sciences, and the NC State College of Humanities and Social Sciences. The theme that night was New Frontiers.
So in spring of 1977, I was a student teacher, and I had just sent my first and second graders out of the classroom to go get on those yellow buses when, over the intercom at Mabel C. O'Donnell Elementary School, I hear,
Mr. Braden, you have a long-distance phone call.
Now, for those of you who have always dialed 10 digits, you have no idea how big this was. Back in 1977, it was a big deal to call a number outside of your area code, much less across state lines. So here I am, this little student teacher, and I'm like walking down the hallway, and everybody's going, "Ooh, oh, long distance phone call, all right." And the secretary hands me the phone. She said, "It's long distance." And I said, "Hi, this is Jeff Braden." And I heard on the other end of the line, "Hello, this is Alan Gardner from the Psychobiology of Language Project at the University of Nevada, Reno. And I want to offer you a full scholarship and admission into our PhD program in experimental psych." And that struck me as odd for really three reasons. Okay, so first, in 1977, Alan Gardner was one of the most well-known scientists on the planet. Alan and his wife, Trixie, had raised a chimpanzee named Washo, and she was the first non-human primate to acquire a human language naturally. In fact, Alan and Trixie were in the middle of a struggle with a linguist named Noam Chomsky. And Professor Chomsky said, "Chimpanzees use language the same way a chicken can fly." In other words, he was disparaging. Noam Chomsky's position was only humans could acquire language. And the Gardners said, "Well, we have this research to show otherwise." And the media was full of these images of, you know, chimpanzees walking with Alan and Trixie across this grass and announcers gushing, "Now we can talk to the animals," and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So I thought it was pretty unlikely that one of the most famous scientists on the planet would be calling me. There was a second reason why I thought it was unlikely. I had never applied to the University of Nevada, Reno. I had never contacted them. I hadn't even looked at graduate school. My game plan was to get married that summer and start my career as an elementary school teacher in rural Wisconsin. So I thought it was pretty unusual to have a world-famous scientist call me out of the blue, I've never talked to him, never contacted him, and offer me a full ride to get my PhD. But the third reason that really convinced me it wasn't Alan Gardner was that voice. I mean, really? You know, we didn't have a word for it back then, but I was convinced that one of my friends was punking me. Because that's the kind of friends I have. So I said what I think only any logical person would say, and I said, yeah, who the fuck is this really? And there was a pause, and then I heard, this is Alan Gardner from the Psychobiology and Language Project at the University of Nevada, and I'm like, no. Well, you probably can guess, I wouldn't be standing here today if it wasn't Alan Gardner from the University of Nevada, Reno, offering me a full ride to get my PhD in experimental psych. And how he got to me is kind of an interesting question, which I will say I will get to directly, which in the South means I'll get there eventually. So, but within 2 months, my wife Jill and I had filled up every possession we had, stuffed it into a two-door Dodge Colt, and we were driving across country to Reno, Nevada. Now, I don't know how many of you have actually met a chimpanzee face-to-face. I have. I've also met a lowland gorilla, but it's pretty interesting. It's kind of freaky, actually. And I started at the Psychobiology Language Project with a chimpanzee named Moja. She was a four-year-old female. She's about 95 pounds, had arms about as long as my legs, and I can show you the exact size of her mouth. It's this moon-shaped scar that I carry right here. And the whole point of Alan and Trixie's research was to raise Moja and two other chimps, Dar and Tatu, in a language-rich environment, which pretty much was middle-class children's existence. So they had their own jackets, they had bathrobes, you know, and all this other stuff. And the idea was you tried to make every possible event a language-mediated event, and sure enough, they signed. They said things like play chase, they said things like want, eat, run, all, you know, bird, all kinds of things. And we worked with them, but as Noam Chomsky frequently pointed out, their signing tended to be pretty concrete, naming things, action, eating, going to the bathroom, whatever it might be. And so a couple of us decided, you know, we really need to expand this. We really need to try and help Moja develop more abstract language. And we thought it would be useful to teach her how to express annoyance at someone else's actions. And so every time she did something that annoyed us, like she ripped the toilet off its moorings and we had water spraying everywhere, you know, she'd do things, bite me, you know, other kinds of things, we'd go like this, which is to express annoyance at another person's actions. And for the people who might be listening to this, I just extended my middle finger. And so we worked a lot with her, and we did this. Well, a couple of, you know, weeks after we started this, Alan had Dar, and one of my other colleagues had Tatu, and I had Moja, and we took them outside when they were playing and running around. And the downside of raising chimpanzees like children is if they want to run away, you can't catch them. They'll go right up on a roof and forget about it. And so Moja decided she was going to take off, and she went up on the big roof of the big house. And there's something really paradoxical about chimpanzees. To get them to come back to you, you scare them. When they are frightened, they seek physical contact with the dominant person in the group. And so Moja took off, Alan looked up, and he goes, okay. And he picks up this rock, and he goes, ooh, 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 and he throws the rock. Well, throws the rock, not at Moja, but near Moja, so that the sound would scare her, and she would come running back, and Moja went like this. Now, The other guy and I are falling on the ground laughing. And Alan goes, what did she say? What did she sign? What did she sign? Because a chimpanzee actually doesn't do this. They don't have opposable thumbs. It's more like this, you know? And so we were just dying laughter. Now, this is science. We couldn't count that as the use of a word until it happened a second time in an appropriate context, independent of the first observation, and we never saw it again. So that event never made it into the annals of science. Well, I will tell you, I didn't stay with the project very long. I left after about a year. But that project, in many ways, changed my outlook and changed my life. I learned a couple of things, really, about not just chimpanzees, but about myself. I learned that I could pick up things about as quick, maybe even quicker, than some of the other grad students. I learned that learning about behavior was fascinating. And I learned that I had the disposition to observe dispassionately and try and link the behavior I saw to theories of behavior and motivation. And so about 8 years later, I got my PhD from the University of California at Berkeley, one of those blue and gold schools. And I went on to a career where I either held tenure or a tenure line position at four different universities, worked with probably over 100 grad students along the way as a social scientist. So I did tell you that I would get to the point about how Alan found me. And this is how it happened. I was teaching American Sign Language at my first alma mater, Beloit College, small liberal arts school in Wisconsin. And one of the fellow students in my class had applied to work on the project and listed a professor of psychology as his reference. Now, that professor of psychology and I knew each other because Beloit's small community in a very small town, but I never had him for a class. I never did any work with him. But when Alan contacted him, he said, well, the guy you're talking about is really good, but the guy you really ought to be talking about, really ought to be talking to, is Jeff Braden. And Alan tracked me down at this elementary school in Illinois and made that call. That act of unrequested, unbidden kindness and advocacy on my behalf changed my life. So when people ask me, did working with chimpanzees prepare you for a career teaching undergraduate students? I say, yeah, not really, but it was invaluable preparation for my 2 terms on faculty senate. What I don't often say is it also taught me that very often the greatest influence that professors have on future scientists is outside the lab and outside the classroom. And I've tried to remember that throughout my career. Thank you.
That was Jeff Braden. Jeff Braden is the Dean of the College of Humanities and Social Sciences and Professor of Psychology at NC State University. Prior to becoming dean, he was a professor and director of school psychology programs at NC State, University of Wisconsin-Madison, San Jose State University, and the University of Florida. Our second story today is from Latasha Wright. It was recorded in October 2016 at Union Hall in Brooklyn, New York. The theme that night was fear.
So after 4 years of college, I got a BS in chemistry. 6 years, yeah, I know, it's crazy. 6 years of graduate school, got a PhD in cell and molecular biology. Okay. 3 years of postdocing. Yeah, I know. And another 2 years, because, you know, one postdoc wasn't enough. I needed to do two, because I'm an overachiever like that. So after 15 years of trying to become a research scientist, I realized that I'm really a science enthusiast. Not really. Yeah, I don't have what it takes, you know? Those research scientists, they have to, like, dig in, like, laser, you know, get, this is the point in the, between the point in between the point. And I'm more like that dog in Up, you know, like, global warming, what, huh? So, photosynthesis, what? Yeah, I want to do that. Particle physics, I can do that. Oh, yeah, I got that. No, nah, that's not what it was. So I decided to use this great talent of mine and really parlay it into another career. And so I joined the BioBus because it's like science outreach. And when I joined, it was an actual bus. And it looked like something out of the Partridge Family. It's got all kinds of colors on it. And little kids are in there like, hey, the hippies are coming. And I'm like, yeah, that's me, man. And I started wearing tie-dye. And, you know, we were all in there and doing science. And I was a scientist with the kids. And kids are looking up to me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a big deal, you know. And so I started that, and we were doing it for a long time, and then, you know, it was successful. You know, scientists who love science teaching kids. Yeah, that worked. And then we got, you know, we got a phone call one day. Okay, stay with me because it gets weird a little bit right now. So it's from the U.S. Forest Service. Yeah? And they're like, yeah, so could you guys, like, consult with us and teach us how to do this in other countries with, you know, other NGOs? And we're like, yo, yeah, go to other countries. I got that, yeah. And so they, you know, this woman whose name was Natasha. She's super sweet, even shorter than me. And then Christina, she's from the Forest Service, so they showed up. And then they brought with them this man from Egypt. His name was Armor. And I don't know if you've ever met somebody, the first time you meet them, you're like, are you my daddy? Because he was just such a force of nature, and he was just so passionate and everything, and I was just like, I just want your approval. Let's not talk about that. And so then, after all of this work, he was like, yeah, you know, you guys should come to Egypt and help us. And so they were getting a bio boat. Yeah, like a yacht, guys, a yacht in Egypt. And I was like, yeah, I can help you, yeah. I can do that. So, you want me to develop a marine biology curriculum for the Red Sea? I got that, yeah. You know, and because I've always wanted to go to Egypt, right? It was when I was little, I used to think about, like, oh, I would want to see the pyramids and ride on the camels. And you know, I used to watch Charlton Heston parting the Red Sea. I'm from Mississippi, guys, sorry. And I was like, I totally am going to go like this when I see the Red Sea and see what happens. I don't know. My part. So we get there, and then I get into his office because, you know, I really worked hard. I YouTubed and I did all that science stuff, and I'm ready. I got my PowerPoint ready to tell him how wonderful I am and show him this curriculum. He's like, wait, hold on. You can't develop a curriculum about coral reefs and the Red Sea without seeing them. And I'm like, but I did. And he was like, no. I understand what you did, but I want you to see the coral reefs. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Yeah, I love boats. Cool. No problem. Yeah, I'm like, this is really cool. So the next day, me, Natasha, Christina, my peeps from the Forest Service, we go to the docks, and we're getting on a boat. and I realized they have their bathing suits on. And I'm like, wait, this is an underwater thing? Hold on. And I'm like, wait, as you know, as we heard earlier, open water, that's where sharks live. So I don't actually go in the ocean. And so I'm getting so nervous because there's a lot of anxiety, right? Because I'm like, what? I have to, you want me to go in the water? Oh, okay. And so we get there and we're on the boat and I'm with my colleagues, Natasha and Christina, and they're all like super happy. And they're like, oh, it's so sweet that Omar did this. And I'm like, yeah, sweet. Yeah, it's super sweet. Yeah. And so then I like start trying to think, what are my escape plans, you know? Because I really love boats and I just want to hang out on the boat and stuff. And so, but I can't really tell Christina and Natasha that I'm really, really scared because I'm their coral reef expert who's so scared to go in the water. And that's probably not what they want to hear. And so then I just started trying to, you know, be cool and be like, hey guys, just so you know, I'm not a strong swimmer. They're like, oh no, that's fine. I'm like, okay. So we get more people learning on the boat. And I'm like, okay. And we're going out further and further in the water. And I hear Armor's voice. You can't make curriculum about coral reefs if you've never seen a coral reef. And I'm like, okay. So what am I gonna do? And my mom's voice is like, stay on the boat. You know you should stay on the boat. So there's this, you can't make curriculum. And my mom, stay on the boat. And I'm like, oh. And so then we go out further. And then I start getting really, really nervous. And I say, hey, guys, you know I've never been snorkeling. They're like, oh, it's pretty fun. It's just easy. Just you know, stuff. You know, get in there, water. Float, you know, and I'm like, okay, okay. And so then they start kind of looking at me like, why is she making all of this? Why is she making these excuses? So then I was like, you know, hey, this is a beautiful sunset. Hey, let's take pictures. Selfie. Who wants to do a selfie with me? Just so that I could look, you know, like, kind of like I'm cool and stuff. And so then I go, we get the water, we get closer and closer. We're in the middle of the water. I can't see any land. And then our guide comes up to us and we start mooring because he says, everybody, the water is really choppy, really, really choppy. So if you can't swim well, you need to stay by the boat. And everybody's like, yeah, okay, no problem. And I'm like, oh, oh God. And I was like, okay. So I nod my head like a lemon and I get in the line like everybody else, got my snorkel. And then they say, so then I say, sir, can I please get, because I noticed that no one else has on a life jacket. And so I go to there and I'm like, hey, sir, may I have a life jacket? And he looks at me like I said the most ridiculous thing that anybody's ever said to him. And so he yells to this other guy. And they come back with this life jacket that I'm not sure it was a life jacket. It was just like, in its previous life, it was like a, you know, it's one of those shirts that I was like a bottle. And, you know, I was just like, okay. So they put this life jacket on me. And then everybody who works starts looking at me because they're like, okay, this one is going to be trouble. And he tells me, oh, if you get in trouble, just raise your hand when you're in the water. And I'm like, is this elementary school? What do you mean? Raise your hand when I'm drowning? That's what you mean? I'm going to be like, oh, I'm drowning. Please help me. Yeah. No. So I'm like, okay. So what am I going to do? So then I get in the line and I see moment of truth. What should I do? I hear Omar's voice in my head saying, you can't do curriculum for the Red Sea if you've never been in the Red Sea. And I hear my mom saying, you better stay on that boat, girl. And then I like see, and then the ladder, everybody's climbing down. And so I get to the edge and I look at the water and it's looks like the jaws are down there or something. I don't know. I'm just so scared. But instead of taking the ladder, because I can't force myself to do that, I just jump in the water. And I can hear while I'm jumping all of the people on the boat going, ah! Because they thought that I just, you know, slipped off the ladder. And then I submerged, and then I came back up. And I started panicking because I could still hear my mom's voice in my head, like, get back on the boat, get back on the boat. And Amr's voice, like, oh, I don't know why I trusted you. And then something miraculously happened. Natasha jumps in, and she looks at me, and she says, just look down. And it's amazing, but I just looked down, and all the voices stopped. It was just silence. And I saw the most beautiful sight that I've ever seen. I saw the colors. I saw little fish coming at each other. I just wanted to be immersed in this world. It was almost like a religious experience. And all of the fear that I had went away, and it was completely, completely worth it. Thank you.
That was Latasha Wright. Latasha Wright received her PhD from NYU in cell and molecular biology and went on to continue her scientific training at Johns Hopkins University and Weill Cornell Medical Center. In 2011, she joined the crew of the BioBus, a mobile science lab dedicated to bringing hands-on science and inspiration to students from all socioeconomic backgrounds. If you enjoyed today's story or are a fan of the podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon.com. If you sign up to donate $10 a month or more, we'll list your name in our show programs across the country. The Story Collider is grateful for the support of the Tiffany & Co. Foundation and of Science Sandbox, a Simons Foundation initiative dedicated to engaging everyone with the process of science. The Story Collider is directed by Liz Neely and me, Aaron Barker, with help from our many vendors and volunteers. The stories featured in today's podcast were from shows produced by me and Nissa Greenberg. The podcast is produced by Zoe Saunders. The theme music is by Ghost. Special thanks to Red Room and Union Hall for hosting these shows, and to all the scientists out there facing their fears. Thanks for listening.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.